everybody. Welcome to a Friday edition Bulldog Hour and a little bit more. CG will join me at 3 o'clock. Go over some of your emails, as always, at tdead1 at att.net. Just a half hour still for the emails when the baseball season for Fresno State winds down, and we hope it's a good long while from now because, naturally, Bulldogs, first of all, are going to be the one seed in the tournament next week in Reno, and we are very hopeful that beyond that they're going to be in a regional and maybe back for the first time since 2008 in a super regional and maybe Omaha beyond that. So if we have a lot of Fridays that are shortened, we will be pleased about that. But we know for sure today we'll go from 2 to 3:30. CG will be with me at 3, Daryl and Marcus with me momentarily, and then it'll be Nick and Nick the Zone at 3:30, and then at 5:30 they'll hand it off to Paul Leppler in Las Vegas. And look, even though the Bulldogs have wrapped up the one seed, we have talked about this over and over again. A couple years ago, Fresno State had the one seed. They went to New Mexico as Albuquerque, the host site for the conference tourney. They lost in two. It was windy and crazy, and they ended up losing twice, particularly blowing a huge lead in the ninth inning at one point. And that resulted in the regular season champion not getting a bid into the NCAAs. So you don't assume anything beyond you've got to turn around momentum-wise, no matter what happens this weekend in Vegas, and get it done in Reno. But in case, for some reason, something screwy happens in Reno, and the weather there can certainly cause that, it's nice to have a possibility at the very least, if not a certainty, and you won't have the certainty, that you can get there via at-large. That's a long way of saying that what Fresno State needs to do is win tonight and tomorrow afternoon and wrap things up with a three-game sweep, have as good a resume as you can have going in to the conference tourney, and hopefully then you find yourself, no matter what, in regional play the following week. We'll see what happens. It has been a frustrating set of circumstances since 2012. We've talked about it over and over again. This was a team that was nationally prominent. Even before they won the national title, they had always been a very good team. After that, you know, they had a couple of appearances, and since 2012, they've sort of disappeared from the national landscape. So hopefully this is a year that it works out for them. We'll see what happens. But anyway, 5:30 today, the pre-6 o'clock, the first pitch. They'll wrap it up tomorrow. Things will get started in Reno on Thursday next week. All right, right now I want to talk to our good friend Daryl Howerton. We're going to go over a little bit of basketball right now on a Friday, usually on a Thursday, but the Giants have, as usual, messed with our time slots. And the same thing will happen next week, by the way. Bring Daryl up right now, hoopmag.com, NBA.com, and we'll talk, first of all, about Deshaun Taylor. Daryl, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Daryl, last night was fascinating, to say the least, and we'll get to that in a couple of moments and see how things go at the Moda Center tomorrow. But I want to start with Deshaun Taylor because you and I have had this conversation many times. We've talked to Deshaun about it as well. The great thing about basketball, Daryl, as you know, as opposed to football, though it's getting better if some of these other leagues can survive. Some guys had paychecks that were never cashable in a league that folded up in mid-year. But there are a few more avenues if the XFL works out version 2 and all of that. But by and large, basketball is the sport coming out of college between the two major sports, football and basketball, where you can make a living without being in the NBA. With Deshaun, does he kind of get the best of both worlds? I mean, the best situation would have been the NBA, but to be able to play in Australia, a league that Andrew Bogut was the most valuable player in and then was able to join the Warriors, that you can play in that league because it starts in October, but it finishes up much earlier. You can play there and then still look to the NBA. Is that the best case right now for Deshaun?
Well, I think the combination of, you know, solidifying your contract as early as possible while other players and prospects are trying to make the summer league, are trying to get G League contracts, are trying to get two-way contracts with the NBA. You know, Deshaun just looks like he chose to bypass all that and take the guaranteed money, you know, probably a nice six-figure deal, and going over to Australia where he knows that he can always come back to the NBA after showing his wares there. And he's a known commodity there. I mean, the NBL looks at him as a big get. I mean, they're already calling him, you know, perhaps the next Patrick Beverley for his offensive and especially his defensive prowess. So, you know, they're really making it known that they wanted him in that league. And for a league that Andrew Bogut was the most valuable player and the defensive player of the year, you know, that's a nice feather in Deshaun's cap.
The comparisons to Patrick Beverley are not inappropriate. I mean, I think Deshaun actually has a better offensive game. At least he's a better shooter than Beverley, although Beverley has his moments. But as far as similarities, they are both hard-nosed, undersized, never back down from anybody guards. Do you find that pretty much accurate?
Yeah, I always kind of patterned him myself as a Lou Williams type. I always saw him being a good sixth man off the bench who could score in flurries. And then this past season, he really made it a big effort to be the defensive player of the year to show everybody that he could play that type of defense. And I saw that Beverley fight in him this year. Not that he's always been a great defender, but when we're talking Patrick Beverley, we're talking about the elite of the elite. And I saw Deshaun go to that level in the Mountain West this year, and it'll be interesting to see him, you know, maintain that in the NBL, because as everybody knows, that the Patrick Beverley fan of him from the Clipper days or Rocket days or wherever you may have seen his game, I mean, he earned his stripes as a 25-year-old, 26-year-old after going through his young 20s playing in an overseas league and every league there was, and becoming the defensive dog that he is. And if Deshaun is looking to pattern himself after that route, you know, he's got a great start over there in Australia, because he'll be going against some men, and he's got the type of young manly game that I know he's going to compete and do very well.
Yeah, that's the where the similarity, I think, is right on the money about the mentality. Patrick Beverley, they talk about this all the time, and I don't mean to imply that Deshaun would fight anybody, though I don't think he would back down either. But they always talk about, as you know, Daryl, the NBA fight. The NBA fight is when two guys yell at one another while their teammates are holding them back. And while from 10 feet away they're screaming at each other how they're going to tear their heads off, they're whispering privately to their teammates, "Don't let go of me," right? Patrick Beverley's a guy who really will fight you. He's one of the guys that when he says it, he means it, that he will go after you. I think that Deshaun is the same kind of guy. I don't think he's going to be intimidated by anybody. I don't know. I mean, I'll ask you, because you cover the international stuff a lot, is it something where you can have that kind of career and never worry about the NBA, even though it's in the back of your mind, or will his game equate to the NBA? Because it's a nice way to make a living regardless, particularly six figures, and you get half the year off. I mean, what do you think ultimately will happen with Deshaun? Is he going to be an international guy most of the time, in your opinion, or will he get a shot in the league?
I think he'll get the shot if he wants the shot. I mean, some of these players, you know, they're happy to make the six figures annually, bouncing from place to place, country to country, and you can't blame them. I mean, Fresno State this year alone had 18 players playing overseas, and that's incredible. Three were playing in the G League, two, of course, in the NBA. So in total, you have basically 23 Fresno State Bulldogs playing professionally, making livings, making good livings. And I think Deshaun will be, you know, he'll definitely fit that mold if that's what he wants to do the next 10, 15 years. We saw Ronaldo Major break every, every D League, every G League record in the books as far as terms for longevity, because he had a longer career than anybody in the history of basketball. We've seen people like Quentin Hosley last, you know, going into his second decade. We've seen a lot of players, you know, Dominic McGuire, you know, who are still playing today, Hector Hernandez. There's a lot of Bulldogs who are going past the 10-year mark as far as, you know, showing that they can make this their, you know, their next career. And I think if Deshaun wants that, he can do that. But I also believe he just wants someone to believe in himself. Once he had not only the Adelaide 36ers support, but also the entire league is making him one of their main guys. I mean, when he signed with them, the Adelaide Sixers were happy to announce the signings of three other pros. But Deshaun got top billing, and the NBL was using his signing as top billing and really hyping up the Patrick Beverley fact and getting quotes from all kinds of people who played with and against him. So, I mean, he really is one of their rookie poster boys out there, someone they're going to hype up. And if he gets that type of support, you never know. He might want to stay there for a couple of years, or he might be able to ride that publicity. And, you know, who knows, if he challenges Bogut for Defensive Player of the Year, maybe he'll parlay that back into a 10-day contract or a end-of-the-year contract with the Golden State Warriors next year like Bogut did.
Well, I'll tell you what you talk about the Warriors, it is not that far-fetched, because he is the type of guy that would fit in very well from a team that, hey, let's be straight about it, Daryl, no matter what happens with Durant, you and I have had this discussion. People have to realize, and this is the trick, and I brought up to you a few weeks ago what happened when Rick Barry left the Warriors after the first title run in the 70s. He left in 78, and he went to Houston as a free agent, but the league had a rule at that point that you had to have light compensation. So he goes to Houston, and they send John Lucas from Houston to the Warriors. And Rick Barry said, wait a minute, I came to Houston to play with John Lucas. And the league wanted to make sure there was compensation. It's one of the reasons that free agency now is through free agency. And for the Warriors, if they lose Durant, they don't have any way to replace him financially. They are capped out. They can pay over and into the luxury tax with Durant. They can't do it if Durant leaves. They can't just replace Durant with a Kawhi Leonard or somebody. It won't work that way. So it means they're going to have to look for guys who are young, who are aggressive, and it won't cost a ton, and that Deshaun Taylor would fit in very nicely. By the way, a quick update here, and we will not be facetious and call it the NCIS because Mark Harmon would get angry about that. The NISC, the softball NIT, if you will, Fresno State, winning yesterday in Reno. Linda Garza's team is down 5-2 in the top of the fifth inning against host school Nevada. Double elimination tournament. The winner of this regional will go on to Fort Collins next week. So we want to update that. They started at 1 o'clock our time. Daryl, before we talk NBA, anything else going on Fresno State-wise you can talk about at the moment, or is it all kind of hush-hush with Hutt and the guys?
Well, not so much hush-hush. I'm just not privy to the information myself. You know,
that's the same thing.
Same
deal.
Hush-hush to me.
Yeah, that's the hush-hush I was referring to. I didn't mean Hutt wasn't telling his fiancé about things. I mean, he's not telling you. That's all I'm getting at. All right. So it's all quiet on the Western Front for Fresno State at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, most of the things I'm getting are all stuff from Fresno State pros. I mean, the Sean Taylor thing, the Paul George surgeries, or his right shoulder, the Tyler Johnson surgeries and all that type of stuff. And just, all the pro players, pro prospects are looking to, there's news out of the combine from various Mountain West prospects. There's transfers going on. From college team to college team. And then you also got, as far as everybody positioning themselves for the draft coming up. So I think it's a time for that. And as far as last year, we had a lot of news with Fresno State players coming and going at this time. But I'm not really hearing that now. I mean, we already reported on the Johnny McWilliams, Miles Fitzgerald, Warren type of things. Those are the only two players I've seen missing from last year's roster. But as far as, all the other ones, all the red shirts are happy and taking their finals and all in great moods. And it's a lot different than last year. We didn't know, who was coming and who was going.
Suffice it to say, the guys that we expect to be eligible are going to be, as far as you know, Juve, et cetera, Sealy, all these guys, as far as you know, ready to go academically, Daryl. I mean, I realize there's a proviso to that, but.
Yeah, as far as I know, when I see them, everybody's happy. They're doing well in school. They're doing their finals. Of course, that's going on. That just happened this week as far as the finals and everything goes. And, of course, the coaches and everybody will be getting their official reports in the weeks to come. But, heading into it, it looks like everything is just, peachy keen, hunky-dory. Everything's going great out here. And we're just looking forward to the next basketball season because there really is a lot of excitement to go with Fresno State getting the recruits they wanted, not only last summer, but this season. The redshirts are now eligible, and there's three guys with starting experience back and a lot of guys with the reserve who played a lot last year, too. So it's a really exciting time, not to mention some transfers that are, here, too, from LSU and Oregon State and so on.
Right. And as you said that, I could just picture Hutt saying things are peachy keen and hunky-dory because, when you talk to Hutt, that's exactly how he
that's
things along to.
That's not in your language. Back from the 20th century.
I was going to say, if there's a guy I think would be less likely to say that than Hutt, it might be me. All right, but there you go. All right. And one other thing about Logan Johnson, he is in the transfer mode, but we don't know where, and that's where we'll leave it at the moment, and we'll see what happens from that. That's the younger brother, of course, of Tyler Johnson. All right, a couple minutes here, Joe. We don't have a lot of time today, but I do want to ask you about the NBA and where we're at right now. This is a conversation I'm going to have with CG, and I'll ask Marcus about it as well. had an email come in, and we're going to go over a few of them, time permitting, when CG comes up at 3:05. But one of the emails, and let me get the right, it was Bo. And Bo said, note to all NBA players and coaches, stop blaming the refs. It's not their fault. When you lose, take responsibility for your own failures. And then in caps, with exclamation points, grow up. Daryl, I happen to agree that I don't expect it to be, you know, Ollie North, the mute marine, okay? I don't expect guys after the game to swallow their pride and not express their frustration. But I think in the league, and this is across the board, has gotten out of hand. This is an impossible league to properly officiate because the guys are big, strong, and fast, and there's a massive bodies all over the place, and you're trying to see what's going on. By and large, outside of the Donaghys of the world who are deliberately messing things up, I think these officials do a terrific job. Has the complaining gotten out of hand, in your opinion?
Yes. I mean, I think the one thing where complaints were valid were there were some old-school referees who were being stubborn and not letting players, the three-point shooters, land. They were letting the defenders get in their landing space, and they were not calling appropriate fouls. I think that ended with Game 1 of the Houston Golden State series, and it has not been a problem ever since. So I do think that was a valid complaint. Now, to defend the referees, I think the complaints have gotten out of hand, and it was so ridiculous. And it has to do with the star players. If you look at the technical fouls and all the complaints and the ejections go on, it happens with your star players. You aren't seeing Quinn Cook and Sean Livingston going off on the referees and getting technicals left and right. You're not seeing, you know, the complaints coming from them. It's from your high-profile players, your James Hardens, your Draymond Greens, your, you know, the guys who are the stars of the team. And, you know, so I think that needs to be addressed in the offseason, because if you're having your Chris Pauls and your LeBron James and your main, you know, stars at the forefront of the league going at it with the refs, it's a bad look. But it's not as universal as people think. It's mainly because the high-profile players are having high-profile beefs with high-profile referees, and that's the main problem. That's why you really saw the referees revolt against that. I believe it was in the month of March, where they just started lighting up technicals left and right on anybody who crossed them. And I think it was a stand they needed to take, because I think that has – caused it to lessen because it was out of control, but the problem still isn't solved yet.
Yeah, and Daryl, that's a fair way to look at it. And I will say this, the officials should not have RAs. People, I think, know what an RA is. An RA is Barry Bonds with 43,000 people cheering for him in his prime, hearing the one guy that was all over him, okay? There are some officials that have the antenna up too much, and I think they need to allow players to talk to them during the game and not tee them up. But as far as the players, and I will give Lillard credit after last night. You know, he said the last play with Iguodala, which, by the way, since you brought up Chris Paul, this has been one of my primary irritations with Chris Paul ever since he was given the galata to people back at Wake Forest, hitting them down under, right? Chris Paul has always been a chippy player. He's a guy who pushes off constantly. Every time he shoots a jump shot, he takes the forearm and shove somebody in the chest. Now, look, that's how he frees up. That's fine. But my attitude has always been, ask no quarter, give no quarter. You can't complain about not getting calls when you're shoving people all over the place. You're diving in front of people. You're flopping constantly. You're begging to have officials, like you said, a little bit of a mutiny against you. Okay, Damian Lillard is not that kind of guy. But last night on that last play, I thought he handled it diplomatically. But when he said there was a lot of contact, I'm talking about initially, but the officials won't call that. He's right. What he also left out, he took his forearm and shoved Iguodala out of the way at the same time Iguodala was coming forward. Now, Lillard did not complain, but he didn't bring that up either. And what I'm saying, I thought the way Lillard handled it was more than fair. But a lot of the guys, they'll go well beyond and act as though they didn't have a 17-point lead. They didn't have an 8-point lead with 4 minutes to go, and somehow the officials stole it from them. And I wonder how much of it is legitimately being frustrated and how much is it just politicking because they know in the 24-hour sports news cycle it's going to get a lot of play.
I mean, I think it's a combination of both, and I think sometimes these players and these coaches really believe what they're saying. I mean, it all started, I believe, and maybe it dates back further, but when I really noticed – an uptick was when Phil Jackson would manipulate the refs left and right, and Pat Riley would, you know, answer in kind. But ever since then, it's been a gamesmanship thing back and forth. But I really do believe a lot of these players, a lot of these coaches really believe that, you know, they're doing no wrong, that they're not seeing the hand in the back as they push them under the basket. They're not seeing, you know, the other things that lead up to it. And I think the main thing you have to look at in these type of things is that you can't let one call or two calls go the other way, because there's always going to be a mistake or two made in the last 2 minutes. The only problem I have with referees is when they violate the consistencies like they did with the landing rule. They weren't calling an NBA rule. And when I say they, it was the veteran refs. The young refs that have come on under Adam Silver's watch are the best referees in basketball. The young ones are phenomenal. They're trained differently than the older veteran ones who still carry some of the grudges of the past. So I think in due time, it might take 10 or 20 years, you're going to see a lot more professional game. But right now you've got a clash, even amongst the referee class, of the young refs who are trained to the utmost, and it's the best training that the NBA has ever given. And then you have some of the old referees wanting to continue making their calls the old ways. And by that, it sometimes has the players confused.
And I understand that, and I also understood why the Rockets initially in the series were saying, hey, you know what, for better or worse, you called it a certain way during the regular season, now you're doing it completely differently, and we think you're doing it as a payback to us. And they might be right, but also say that Harden and Paul had it coming for the behavior on the court, but that's another story. The Warriors have guys like Draymond. The same thing happens. I did want to ask you, though, since you brought it up, Adam Silver has said he'd like to see
the candidates, but there are a lot of top women who are grading out, you know, alongside the top men. So I think what Adam wants to know is, you know, if we, instead of putting 10 people into this group of 50, what happens if we make it, you know, 25 and 25? How do they test out then? And I think that's what he wants to explore, making sure that he lets women know that if they want a job as a referee, they're open to hiring, because the ones that have been applying, and granted, they're the best of the best, but they've been testing out very, very well. And I think this new class of referees that all came in, and really Adam's done a lot to upgrade the level of this type of thing, I think we're not going to really see the benefits of it all until the 2030s decade, maybe even later in the 2020s. And there's going to have to be some changes, because it's one thing for Draymond Green to call a referee a bad name. But when he calls a woman that bad name, even though people might say equal treatment, blah, 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 that same word carries different connotations when he says it to a woman as opposed to a man. So I think there's going to have to be some changes on both sides, you know, going forward. And I think in the long run, it'll create a more respectful league. And if the results are true as what I'm hearing, according to the grades that come out, an even better refereed league.
Well, I'll tell you what, if Draymond does that, Draymond's mom will take care of business in a big hurry with Draymond. Trust me on that one. He is a typical NBA guy. He's afraid of nobody but his mother. He is afraid of his mom, and I don't blame him. Stephen A. Smith is afraid of Draymond's mom, too, and Kevin Durant's mother, Wanda, as well. Which brings up the last thing for today, and that is Mr. NBA Insider, hoopbag.com, NBA.com. Please read everything Daryl writes. There's your own promo. You owe me now.
Thank you.
Kevin Durant, look, whatever's going to happen in the summer is going to happen. But for right now, you know, and we talked about it, the minute that he limped off the court in late third quarter of Game 5 against the Rockets, Stephen A. Smith came on and said, they're saying calf strain, but I don't believe it. It's an Achilles. I know it's an Achilles. The longer this goes, and the Warriors have said now that he'll be evaluated in a week. If that is accurate, he'd have to be out mandatorily through Game 5. You and I both know what they want. They want to get through this Portland series without using him at all. But are you starting to get a little suspicious that maybe it is something, when Kerr said it's more serious than we thought? Are they starting to let, like the politicians would, let information out incrementally, leading the Hansel and Gretel approach, following the breadcrumbs to the inevitable? Durant has a problem with his Achilles, or is it truly a calf situation only, in your opinion?
Oh, within the hour when the injury first happened, I did what any FanDuel football fan would do. I went to @footballdoc, the guy who diagnoses all the football injuries off of videotape. He's a former NFL doctor, so they sent the video to him. He said it's an Achilles. He's going to be out for a long time. So the day that the injury happened with Durant, I retweeted that, and that's what I've been saying ever since in writing, you know, assuming that he wasn't going to play And it was a God-given fact that he wasn't going to play in the Houston series. I was positive he wasn't going to play in the West Finals. And it seemed to me it'd be doubtful he'd even make it to the NBA Finals. So that's the attitude I've taken. And every time I hear a new report every 3 days, like, we're going to evaluate another week, I'm like, I just laugh to myself because, once again, the football doc is always right.
Well, we'll see. I know this. The Warriors have said they have no intention of bringing DeMarcus Cousins back, even if Boogie wants to come back. I mean, you know, they're gonna play 13 guys, but they don't want Cousins to be one of them. He wouldn't be in game shape. They don't want to risk further injury. If Durant is out, the only good piece of news, as I let you go, my friend, from Warrior perspective, is that Damian Jones is back on the court. That means they get the guy who was supposed to start originally when the year began as center, but he's not in game shape either. So I'd have to say, objectively, they can get past this Portland series, but I don't think they can win the title without Durant. Am I wrong about that?
I think the East two teams, the Bucks and the Raptors, are the best Eastern Conference teams we've seen since the Miami Heat-LeBron teams. So I think that's when they would be the underdog. That's when it would be tough. The only thing they'd have in their favor is chemistry and playoff experience, whereas the Bucks and Raptors would have much more talent and a much better bench. And I would pick those teams to be the favorite in that type of series as well.
Well, obviously, I'd be pulling for the Warriors, but also keep in mind, for the first time since 1975, that original title in the West, they're not going to be the home team. For the first time during this run, if they get through this mandatorily, whether it's Toronto or Milwaukee, they're going to open on the road. Now, they've been great on the road, but I just don't know if the combination, if it is no Durant and opening on the road, whether this team can get it done. Like I said, I'm pulling for them, but to be as objective as possible, I don't think they have enough. But we'll see. You know, they're still undefeated against the Blazers, and they did beat the Rockets, so one never knows. Daryl, I appreciate it, my friend. We will talk more at length next week. Have a great weekend, and if anything happens Fresno State-wise, you be sure and call me in the middle of the night, and I'll make sure the answering machine picks it up. All right?
Will do. Will do.
I'll talk to you later, Daryl. Take care.
I'll
see you. All right. Okay. He thought I was headed to, I'll pick up the phone. Of course not. I'm not going to pick up the phone. It's going to go just like with me. I call him. He recognizes the number or private number, and immediately lets it go to voicemail. I don't blame him. The same thing my family does to me. All right. I'm going to take a break. Come back with Marcus, then CG, and then Nick, and then Bulldog Baseball on 940. The Giants were in Arizona over on 790. This is 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Everybody, welcome back. 2:35 here until 3:30. We'll hand it off to Nick in the zone. They'll go 3:30 to 5:30. Then off to Paul in Las Vegas, Bulldog Baseball, wrapping up the regular season title yesterday. But as we were talking earlier, they would like to sweep this series, not only for momentum's sake, but put a little bit more on your resume just in case something happens to you, which it easily can when you get to Reno next Thursday to play that double elimination tournament, where the only guaranteed entrant is going to be the winner of that particular tournament. It's nice that it mimics exactly what happens the following week if you're in a regional as a four-teamer, but it also means that as much as you like a regular season title, you still are going to have to, if you want to be certain, win your conference tournament. If not, you're going to have to fall back in a large opportunity. So the more you put on the resume this weekend, the better off you are. Speaking of Bulldogs with Bat and Ball Sports in Reno, 8-2 Nevada over Fresno State as they are playing right now in the top of the sixth inning. The Bulldogs are the designated visiting team. They won yesterday against UC Riverside. This is the NIT, if you will, of softball. Whoever wins this weekend will go to Fort Collins next weekend. Bulldogs, then, if they don't rally right now, will be facing elimination when they play again. We'll update you. It may very well be over. Probably should be over by the time we wrap up at 3:30 today. Right now, chance to talk to our good friend, the Culver City Madman himself, the king of fantasy at NFL Network, a guy who's had no sleep since his son was born about a month ago. It's Marcus Grant. Em, how you doing?
Yeah, this kid refuses to sleep, so that means that I apparently can't sleep either.
Yeah, I told you what happened to me with the old nuclear physicist, right? He used to run around in the middle of the night. I mentioned to you last week, and I just said, $500 if you go to bed. This is me negotiating with, like, you know, a six-month-old. So if you just stop it, just, you know, you're a year old and you're running all over the place. I'll do anything, whatever you want. You want to eat candy? Here's some candy. Just stop it, you know. And he didn't stop, and he hasn't stopped yet. So the only good news now, he's 3,000 miles away, and I'm not personally responsible for it. Though I did hear yesterday the great news. They're transferring me to San Diego. So he's going to be back in state, Marcus. So, you know what that means for me, don't you? That means by truck only 5 hours away from him showing up at the doorstep out of nowhere. That's what it means. Okay. Other than that, everything going on. Does he still sound like a Velociraptor? Not my kid, yours. Is he still screeching at you, or has he settled down with that?
Not quite as much, but still squeaking every once in a while and making strange noises. Yeah, that hasn't quite stopped yet.
Yeah, it won't stop after 22 years either. So just so you know, when they're doing it in their mid-20s, that's when you're concerned. When you say, my kid's 25 and he sounds like a Velociraptor, it's something you got to worry about. All right. I appreciate you toughing it out and showing up. And I know you guys are working real hard there in Fantasyland. What are you doing right now in regard to fantasy? You guys do anything at this particular time as far as getting ready? Because we're going to close in fairly quickly now, aren't we?
Yeah, we're starting to do, rankings, top 200. I am actually in the process of doing a couple of mock drafts right now. And on top of that, our weekly podcast that we do is now half Game of Thrones talk because, it's May, and so what else are we going to do?
Well, David Carr told me that Marcus storms in the door and demands more FaceTime all the time, and they keep having to haul you off the set. Is that you're like Gus, the lovable bookmobile guy from the original Letterman show, the guy who would break into Live at 5 with the forklift? You remember the guy? Okay, that's you, right? Busted through the door, demanding more airtime. Am I right about that?
And being hauled out by security. Yeah,
well, that's always
what you have to do.
Well, that's the given, isn't it? That happens every day, no matter what. So, all right, I was just talking to Daryl about this. I want to ask you about I got an email about officiating in regard to the NBA, but I want to ask you about the NFL. The reaction from the Saints and the Rams, a lot of people feel there's a direct correlation now in the NBA, and the coaches' challenges are next, which I don't think is that bad an idea if you have one only. But are we as a sports society starting to overreact a little bit, or are you okay with the – I know our buddy Gino in Visalia is apoplectic about this. He feels it's the death of sport. Gino, if I'm overstating it, I'm sorry. But he is really sick, judging from the emails. Well, he's sick, period. But I'm judging from the emails about this particular subject. He's a guy who still remembers what happened to you in Bakersfield, by the way. He feels as though we have gotten to a point where we're over, and to quote Marv Levy, we're all over officious jerks at this point that are in favor of more replay, etc. Is it a bridge too far now? Have we gotten carried away in every sport? We saw it in hockey the other night. We have the clamoring in the NBA. What about it? Are we taking advantage of technology, or have we allowed it to strangle us in a figurative sense?
I would go with the latter. I mean, but I also realize that, I'm sort of – I know that I am in the minority because I have always sort of believed in the human element, and I was never really a fan of replay. I have grudgingly accepted it because it has become the norm. But I do think there are times when, I think it's frustrating in the NFL, for instance, when – we have to go and determine whether or not something was a catch or what have you, and it is like reviewing the Zapruder film as we go frame by frame, to see if somebody kicked a blade of grass that was inbounds or out of bounds or what have you. And was it the playoffs last year in baseball when on a stolen base attempt someone's hand slightly comes off the base and they're determining whether or not a guy's finger was a millimeter off the base and he was out. So I do think there. That a lot of times what we've done with replay is that it has sort of gone against the spirit of replay as we try to get everything perfectly right. I mean, was it the NCAA championship where you have a guy who has a ball swatted out of his hand and somehow we determine that it's his finger touched it last and so the ball goes the other way. I just think that in the effort to try to get everything right, we really have sort of made everything so granular that I think it has kind of taken away the spirit. And a lot of times I think it's taken away some of the fun and excitement out of games.
I would like to disagree with you, but in substance, I probably do agree. Although I hate to admit you're right. And Gino, I hate to admit in particular that you're correct. Yeah, I'll tell you this, Em. When I was in college, which I think it was somewhere back in the 40s. I'm not sure. 1840s. That's always the joke that comes. Yeah, I was chasing a 4.0 because of law school, and it was a big deal to me. And there was one class that was problematic, and I went in to talk to a professor. And I was complaining about, I forgot what, complaining about the sun probably rising in the east. Probably bothered me that particular day. I went in and I said something about a grade I didn't like, and he said, look, you know what, if you get one B in a given test, I got 88% of 4 points per deal. So there were 25 questions, and I had changed one answer belatedly and misunderstood with it. And anyway, I thought I should have gotten a 92. It was just a test during the year, right? And I got an 88, and I said, you know what, I deserved the A, and I tried to explain why. And he goes, look, if you get all A's, there's nothing to that. Just get a B, and it makes you human. And I said, I don't want to be human. I want to be perfect. And he looked at me, and he said, you know what, two things. One, you're headed for a real tortured life. And two, you are tending toward not being human anyway, so get out of my office. That was pretty much the conversation, right? And that was, seriously, I was 21 years old. I've learned nothing, Marcus, in 40-plus years. Not a damn thing, except that there probably is a human element that is missing now. And I was talking to CG about this, and this is something that he brought up, and I think it's right on the money. When we are adjudicating all this stuff, right, we don't take in the same human element that we do in during the regular play of the game. For instance, the review at the end of the game about whether there's 0.9 seconds to go or 0.5 seconds, and when we go review, we review on the basis, Marcus, of when the ball went through the net, when you and I both know the rest of the game you have to allow the time for human reaction. Why is it when we do it at the end of the game, we say, okay, it went through the twine at 0.9. Don't you have to wait for the normal reaction time when you call a foul, when you go ahead and stop the clock? Why do we then turn around and use replay review to do something that doesn't take into account the human reaction time, yet we make that gospel? Why do we do that? Shouldn't there be a built-in time frame there?
You would think so. I mean, I think the corollary to that is how we place added importance upon end of game situations. I mean, the same way, you know, you'll see in whatever sport, if it's the NBA or the NFL, you know, a foul called or a penalty called late in the game, and people will howl like, oh, you can't call that there, or you know, you wouldn't call that in a close game, what have you. You know, people tend to think, easy for me to say, tend to think that we should treat these late game situations differently because in theory they have more of an outcome on the game. You know, whereas the other 48 minutes or what have you, other 59 minutes, you know, should be just as important. I think just, you know, we somehow place added importance upon end of game situations, where, you know, I don't know that it necessarily needs to be that way, but somehow we've just decided that that's how it is.
Well, let's go back then to what I think has started this avalanche. I'm not saying it wasn't brewing prior, but you and I both know the apex was the NFC Championship game, right? Is there any doubt, Marcus, from a societal standpoint?
Oh, no.
In the fact, you know, look, Jimmy Buffett the other night was had the cane and the dark glasses on, right? I mean, they have really gotten over it well. Even finding out that Zion may show up evidently has not salved the wounds in the Benson family either, okay? And nice to know that Gail Benson has decided she'll deal with the Lakers over her dead body. So, jeez, you know, so you say there's a chance? You know, that kind of thing about Anthony Davis. But the point that the Ram fans made, and you know how much that bothered me because they're Ram fans, and I hate to see them make a good point, and A+, I hate to concede that. But when they said, okay, that was a call that was incorrect, but how about the personal foul, the face mask on Goff that wasn't called? You and I had the conversation many moons ago about the perfect game that got away with Jim Joyce's wrong call, right, on what should have been the 27th out in Cleveland. Our buddy Jason Donald, as you know, is the guy who started that play. And we said that if it's the final out, the final play, you should be able to go back post facto and correct it. Are you still of a mind that that applies, Marcus, or do you truly say every time you go to review something, even if it's the last play of a football game, the last play of a basketball game, you are ignoring something that was missed earlier, or do you say, let me bring up last night as an example, okay? The Blazers, there were three or four plays late in the game last night prior to the Lillard strip by Iguodala where, and Brian Windhorst brought it up earlier today, where the Blazers had issue about things, okay? I don't think any of them were legit, but they had issue. Okay. Also, what's undeniable, they had a 17-point lead in the second half and an 8-point lead with 4 minutes to go. Can you consolidate that, Marcus? Can you compartmentalize and get back to that final play and say, I don't care how many breaks this team got prior or how big a lead they had, I'm still going to focus on that final play, and that's all there is to it, and if it's wrong, then it should have been corrected, or are you a guy who's going to stand by, take it as a whole, and not look at just one play?
Yeah, I think it's just hard to look at one play there. And look, I understand if you're a Portland fan, you want to look at that and you want to see whether or not Iguodala, you know, committed a foul in that situation. But, you know, I think that versus the Jim Joyce situation, I think that is sort of a singular play where that really did impact the outcome of the game. I mean, look, it didn't change the final score, who won and lost, but it did kind of take away a piece of history. I think when you talk about whether it's the Rams and Saints, whether it's the Blazers and Warriors, I think you start looking at, well, okay, well, we review this play. Well, then what happened, say, a few minutes before that, or what happened in the previous quarter? I think that gets a little bit harder to parse because you do start looking at, one thing begets another, and situations change and gameplay changes because of that. And I think that gets a little bit harder to try and justify.
Okay, I agree with you. Then should we go back to a premise of give coaches in every sport, and I'm talking about college as well, give them two challenges. Let's give them two, a third, much like the NFL has, if you're right, and say the burden is never on the officials, it's on the coaches. And even in the last 2 minutes, let's get rid of the last 2 minute stuff and say, you've got these in your pocket. As a coach, you make a determination when something is important enough to challenge. And if it's, you know, 3rd and 8, Marcus, and it's a 9-yard completion in the first quarter, and you go, you know what, give them the first down, it's not going to decide the game. I'd rather keep that in my hip pocket. Would that be a better way to do it and tell a coach you can challenge whatever you want if the video shows it? If it's subjective, the video's still going to show it. That's the case, but no burden on the official. If you are not aware enough to see it, or you don't have a challenge in your pocket or a timeout, that's your fault. Would that solve most of this in every sport?
I don't know. I think the byproduct of that, though, is that you end up having officials that are maybe scared to call something for fear that it's going to be overturned. I mean, I think we see it in some respects in the NFL, where if there is a turnover or something that could be a turnover or a scoring play, they will allow the play to continue and sort of let replay come in and bail them out on the back end. And I just wonder whether or not if coaches have the ability to challenge everything, if officials will sort of be more reluctant to maybe make a close call and allow the coach themselves to kind of sort of make the call for them and allow them to bail out.
As I let you go, are we headed for a mess in the NFL, Mr. NFL Network, NFL.com, when we open this up this next year to challenges and pass interference? Are you cringing about this already?
A little bit. I'm curious to see. You know, I think we'll get a test of it in the preseason, you know, because that is sort of the training ground for a lot of these new rules, is that they will call it especially close in the preseason. And so I can imagine the first couple of weeks we will have a hue and cry from sports fans and sports writers about it. And then maybe by the time we get to week one, they will have sorted things out. But I do think that, you know, if this thing really changes and we see it in the preseason, I would think the first couple of weeks will probably be pretty messy.
Yeah, I think you're right. I still think it's better to put it in the coach's hands, despite what you were saying. Your points are well taken. I think you just need to get to a point of saying, be judicious with your challenges, and we'll let you challenge everything, understanding that's all you have. You cannot fall back on the officials, but I'm probably, as usual, a cult of one. All right, members, I'll let you go. NFL Network, NFL.com. I asked Daryl, I'll ask you in the last 30 seconds, is it Durant with an Achilles and the Warriors don't want to tell us? Is that your opinion?
I think so. I mean, that's what it looked like, just seeing the way he kind of pulled up. It looked like an Achilles, and maybe it's not torn, maybe it's just strained, but I think things are worse than the Warriors have been letting on. I think slowly that information will come out.
The only thing I can tell you is that he has a history of calf pulls. That's the only thing that mitigates against it, but he's definitely going to be out, it appears, through Game 5. They can probably win this series, but you with me, they're not going to win an NBA title without him.
It's hard, especially if they run up on Milwaukee. I just don't know if they can beat the Bucks without Kevin Durant.
Well, we said this was going to end. Remember what Ray Ratto said. This was going to end with the roller coaster car flying off the tracks, hurtling toward the cement below. Enjoy it before that occurs. Trust me, my friend, the cement is getting very near. All right. At least that's what Donny Hathaway told me. Don't you dare. I'll apologize to people back in the 70s myself. I'll talk to you later, Ever. Have a great one.
Take care, Tom.
Always end on a high note, don't I? Always end on a high note. So, I'll see you. All right, guys. Marcus Grant. We'll take a break. Wrap up hour one on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Welcome back. Thanks again to Daryl and Marcus for their time. CG coming up another half hour. We'll go over emails, and then it'll be time for Nick and Nick. They'll go 3:30 to 5:30, and then Paul will be up from Las Vegas at 5:30. Nevada leading Fresno State in the NIT version of the softball postseason, 8-3 right now, and they are in the seventh innings of the Bulldogs with their last ABs. We'll see how they can do. We'll update that coming off the break. This is KFIG Fresno. Everybody, welcome back. About a half hour to go as we continue on until 3:30. Nick and Nick will take over to the zone, 3:30 to 5:30, and then Paul will be up from Las Vegas. The Bulldogs want to sweep this series if possible, one today and then the final one tomorrow, and have as much of an RPI cushion, if that's the right way to look at it, going into the conference tournament next weekend in Reno. The Bulldogs will be the one seed, but you would like to have a little bit of a safety net. We'll see, and I don't even know if that safety net would be applicable anyhow. So you just try to win today and tomorrow and get ready for next Thursday and see what happens from there. Softball team losing to Nevada 8-3 in whatever they're calling the tournament. Like I said, I referred to it as the NCIS yesterday. Mark Harmon would have sued me if I didn't correct it. It's those letters in a different order, but anyway, it's an NIT version of everything. The Bulldogs now have to win in this double elimination tournament or they're out. If they can win the tournament, this weekend they go to Fort Collins next weekend. Our buddy Chris in Seattle. Chris, I agree. It is not the NC2As, and after 30 years in a row of that, I have a little bit of trouble getting excited about this. But you know what? I know they're playing, and I hope things go well and they get good experience. That's all there is to it. All right, let's bring our good friend Christopher Gabriel up right now. CG had the morning shift today. Back next week, as usual, slot Monday through Thursday, 3 to 6. CG, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing well. I'm a little ornery, basically about what you were just talking about a second ago. You know, the you're absolutely right about getting the RPI buffer, because and today's performance so far from the softball team takes a little bit of wind out of my sails. But be that as it may, it is clear that the knuckleheads at the NCAA selection committees put far too much stock in analytics and far little stock. They don't put enough stock into the eye test and, two words, common sense. It still astounds me that number two San Jose State, number three UNLV, number four Fresno State, all finishing higher than number five Boise State, and the three teams combined beat Boise State 8 of 9 games, and yet 2, 3, and 4 don't go to the NCAA. Boise State does. Why? Because they had a higher RPI. And today, you know, credit to Boise State. They went to the Gainesville Regional, and they beat Stanford. They pounded them. So, you know, they're in the winner's bracket now. Fresno State, you would have thought, in this, you know, the Mark Harmon tournament, that they would have been lit on fire being so frustrated not getting to the NCAA. And, you know, they're getting pounded today. So, Beyond that, I do think that there's just no rhyme or reason to the NCAA, Tony. This is a subject that you and I have talked about endlessly, and I know we'll continue to.
No, you're right. You're right, and it is unfortunate for those that work so hard all year to get the chance, but it is what it is, and I know that Boise State, coming off of the conference title last year as well, had a little bit more notoriety than they had in the past. They've only been back playing softball since, what, 09, whatever it is. All right, CG, in the time we have here, a couple of things here, and Russ and I were talking about this during the break. I want to clarify this about Kevin Durant. I, honest to goodness, even though I'm around the team a great deal, have no idea whether Durant has a calf strain or an Achilles problem. The national network with Stephen A. Smith had been banging the drum over and over again about the Achilles. The Warriors are insistent that it is a calf strain. And as Russ had pointed out, and Brian Windhorst has said the last couple of days on The Jump and on the network itself, that the Warriors are trying to hold Durant as long as possible and as long as they're in control of this series. And after last night, they have a much more hearty grip on things than they would have if that game turned out differently. They will hold him out until they absolutely need him. Ideally, they will wait until the finals if they get there. CG, we have to take them on their word. I don't know. It certainly has been, hey, wait, it's not going to be yet. Oh, it's going to be a little bit longer, but I suppose it's possible, Christopher, that with a calf strain, it can be that problematic. Are you suspicious at all about the Warrior explanation?
Completely, Tony. And you hit the key name, Brian Windhorst, because I've heard his comments the last couple of days. And last night, Tony, and you certainly heard this, he was almost borderline emphatic, saying that, essentially saying, if the Warriors fall behind in this series, if it gets a little bit concerning for them, you're going to see him on the court. And yet Steve Kerr is coming out and saying the injury is much worse than we anticipated it being. Right now, we're getting an NHL look from the Warriors. You know, the classic, well, it's a lower body injury, or it's an upper body injury, and nobody's telling anybody anything. Every time we see Durant, when TNT or ESPN gives us a shot of him, he's never moving. He's standing in one spot. So I don't know what to make. I'm with you. I don't know what to make of it. I am a little suspicious, though, Tony. And it's they won last night. It was a very different game. You're on track to get your sweep. I still don't think they're going to win both games up there. But
nor
be that as
I.
it may, they're going to win this series. They're not going to lose this series to a fine young Portland team. But I am suspicious, Tony. There's no question.
Well, the other thing is, and CG, I'm glad you brought it up about that. You know, I looked to say, Wilbon said yesterday, Levitard. Break glass if necessary. Meaning to go up with a fire extinguisher if it turns into an inferno. If the Warriors are true to their word about their evaluation, independent of what they're actually evaluating, let's give them the benefit of the doubt and say it is a calf strain. And Durant, much like Curry has the ankle issues, Durant has had calf issues. Scottie Pippen said his calves aren't that big. It shouldn't take that long, right? If they are going to say it's going to be a week evaluation period, that would be next Thursday, and mandatorily we would be through Game 5. And that was said prior to last night's game. So for the sake of argument, if that is their time frame, if the Warriors would have lost last night, which they easily could have since they were down 17 in the second half and down 8 with 4 minutes to go, that decision would have meant that in theory, they could have lost last night and lost two in Portland and been home next Wednesday for Game 5, down 3-1, and they still would not have evaluated Durant. And that's where the Windhorst comment comes in, because if the Warriors were going to be true to their word, CG, they could have been down 3-1 when they made that comment, and Windhorst would be saying then, what, they were going to rush him in the lineup? That's what he was saying, essentially, right?
Yeah, there's no question about it. And Tony, the other variable in play here that we've not discussed, and I've not heard it discussed really nationally, but I think it plays in somewhere, is where does Kevin Durant's impending free agency play into this? Because there's a couple of different ways to look at that. Are the Warriors trying to say, since you're going to leave us, we're not going to keep you here, keep you out of the court, or we're not going to hurt you. You've given us so much good time. We're not going to screw up your calf or your Achilles or whatever the heck it is anymore. Or is there some other, I don't want to use the word nefarious, but something else that's a little bit asunder that they're doing because they're not happy that he's going to leave. I mean, somewhere in the mix, I just wonder if that's in play.
Well, you know, you're bringing up a fascinating sidebar because, one, they're going through the same thing with Boogie Cousins right now. Boogie's saying, I want to come back and play. And the Warriors are saying, you know what, for your own well-being, we really don't intend to play you. You need to heal that quad tear. We don't want to damage your free agency, knowing fully well if he doesn't get back on the court, the likelihood that he won't get the great offer is there, and then maybe he comes back to the Warriors. You can make the argument with Durant that if the Warriors hold Durant, the perception can be to the rest of the league, maybe he's damaged goods, therefore it makes more sense for Durant to sign one more one and off with the Warriors.
Exactly.
I'm not saying that's what's going on,
right.
But I think with Durant in particular, with Cousins, I think there is a very real possibility if he doesn't play at all, he may be coming back because the Warriors can pay him a little bit of money while he shows the league again that he's healthy to play. With Durant, I think there are so many teams that are willing to take you could tell some of these teams that Durant has a torn Achilles, and they say, fine, we're still going to give him maximum money. So, because he's the best player in the world. It is
right.
An interesting
right.
Sidebar. CG, I want to ask you about something that just came up again. And I'm loathe to say this to you because it's an admission for me of being wrong. I have been a guy over and over again that has said, I don't care how tedious replay is, I just want it right. It's really important. As a Raider fan growing up, I saw them lose an AFC title game on a blatant missed call on a fumble at the yard-and-a-half line that was ruled a touchdown. Now, after all of this stuff, I'm almost to the point of saying, you know what? To hell with it. Let's just go back to no reviews whatsoever, maybe a coach's challenge or two. But let's forget the ongoing stuff. It's become too tedious. How do you feel about it now?
Well, I don't know that they can turn the clock back on this one. And I think your point is a real valid one. And Tony, I think it's shared by a lot of people, fans, players, management, coaches, and owners. I think a lot of people feel that way. But it seems like the lean in sports is not to go backwards, but to give more. And if anything, when it comes to the whole issue of first instant replay and now replay, if anything, we're going to get more. And it's ironic that this has been a year in every professional sport, not yet baseball, but I'm sure there's plenty of time for it to happen in baseball this summer.
No doubt about it. Yeah, we got a whole summer and fall.
Exactly.
You're right about that.
We had the benchmark play in football in the Saints-Rams game. We've had multiple plays in hockey, and they've all centered around the team up in San Jose, certainly the other night, where we had the hand pass, but we also had the delay of game with the puck clearly getting shot over the glass and into the netting, and both plays are non-reviewable plays. And, Tony, if we go with your thought and say, let's just get rid of it and just have a couple of coaches' challenges and we'll leave it at that, I think the problem is going to be when you get through when a coach has two challenges and they get through their two, and then the third challenge would have been, say, the other night in overtime, and the goal is scored to win the game, and too bad, St. Louis, you're out of challenges. Yeah, that was a missed call, and everybody in the world saw it, but we can't do anything about it. That's where I think we get into trouble if we just get rid of it completely. There's never going to be a happy medium. That's the problem that we all face here, Tony.
Well, yeah, and that is the one major flaw in the preference, if you were to have one, of saying two challenges, a third, like the NFL, as if you get the first two right, but there's no guarantee you get the first two right.
Right.
What coaches would say, and you're right there in lockstep with me, CG, they would say, you know what, I refuse to be held hostage by an incompetent officiating crew. In other words, a crew that made mistakes earlier in the proceedings. And so I had to use up my challenges. And one time, even though I was sure I was right, they said I was wrong. So I'm out of challenges now. I can't get my third challenge. And because of their incompetence, they've made another mistake, and now it's too late for me to do anything about it. That's the first thing you would hear, right? These guys were so bad tonight that I had no choice but to burn my challenges, and they even screwed up one of my challenges. Therefore, it has ruined our chance to win. But the flip side, CG, as much as I want to see it right, it's gotten to a point where we play for 2 minutes and then we stand for 5 minutes. I mean, are you as tired of it as I am?
Oh, I am. No, I hear you. And I wonder, Tony, you know, we have unintended consequences with everything. Let's take this a step further. Would this, if we got rid of it altogether and you only had two or three, whatever, coaches' challenges, what impact will that have on referees, on how they officiate a game? Are they going to be a little tighter or a little looser as they understand a game is going on and there's, you know, nobody has used their challenges yet? Or if the coaches use their challenges early, will that change then how they officiate?
Well, that's the big question. The other one is the one we talked about in regard to the two-point conversion, if you remember. The NFL was loath to put it. They had it a long time ago. They took it out, and then when the AFL started with the two-point conversion, you know, the NFL wasn't going to do that, right, because they didn't want to either copycatting the lesser league. But when they reinstituted it, a lot of coaches were against it, and you and I both know why, because it forced the coaches to make a decision, right? They were actually happier knowing you had a one-point conversion and that's it, so they weren't playing this. How many times have you heard coaches criticize CG over and over again about he should have gone for two or he went for two too early? They liked it better when they didn't have the choice. And what happened with the coach's challenge, as you pointed out, if you didn't challenge something early that turned out to be important because there wasn't another challenge later, you didn't know it, right? There wasn't a challengeable play. People are going to say, well, you should have made that call in the second quarter. And before you know it, the coach is saying, how did I know? I had to hold on to it. And it's further scrutiny on a coaching staff that really doesn't want further scrutiny from the media or fans. Am I right about that?
Yeah, you are. You are right about that. And this really does, in a broader sense, Tony, fall into the category of be careful what you wish for. Because, you know, we can go back, you and I in particular, can go back a lot of years with games in every sport, especially at the highest level, be it the Super Bowl, Stanley Cup Finals, NBA Finals, or World Series, games that had something. The image that immediately pops to mind is Reggie Jackson off first base leaning his thigh out to disrupt the ball, right? And can you imagine that play happening now? And what would that game how would that game have played out? How would the series have played out had that been a reversible or reviewable play? I don't know what direction they're going to go. I think a case can be made for getting rid of it, but my gut tells me, you know what, they've got it, and now they're either going to try to quote-unquote perfect it or they're going to add more layers to it, and games are going to start getting longer and longer. I had Dan Rizanowski on, you know, our good friend up in San Jose, the voice of the Sharks, and he said, are we working our way to 4 and 4.5 hours hour games if we start reviewing every last thing?
And then the flip side is, and this is something that I remember like it was yesterday, even though I didn't have a dog in the race, maybe because I hated the Steelers because they kept beating the Raiders, but the Steelers and the Oilers, the then Houston Oilers, played an AFC title game, and it took 6 days to get the proper angle that Mike Renfro in the far corner of the end zone at Three Rivers, I remember the play, it actually made the catch, but they didn't have any video of it. They didn't have all the cameras everywhere. Think about that now. 6 days later, it was exposed that, yes, he was indeed in. Do we want to have that happen? Because you don't have to wait 6 days. You have to wait about 6 seconds for that. Does that then damage the league? I think one of the problems, Christopher, is in a sport like basketball where you have so many possessions, as opposed to football where it may be just a couple of possessions in the fourth quarter, right? Is it harder in a sport where you've got so many possessions to really say even one right at the end of the game can take precedence over everything that happened prior, where in a sport with fewer possessions, maybe there is that greater import like the Rams and the Saints?
Well, there's no question. There's no question, Tony. And as you were saying that, one other thing came to mind here. Think about social media now. I know that you're not on Twitter, but you certainly go and look at Twitter and see what's on there. Anybody can do that. Tony, think about the amount of plays, whether we're talking about a game with like football where there's just so many possessions or we're looking at something, you know, with a few less possessions than football. And think about the people who are courtside or rinkside that have their iPhone or their iPad there and they take a shot of something that completely contradicts the way something was called, And suddenly that goes viral and you see, you know, 1.7 million views. And because of the proliferation of social media, that too has become an added burden on the referees as well as the instant replay officials, because they're getting essentially judged by people that happen to be in the right seats with the, you know, with the right camera angle, and they caught, they had their video on at the right moment. That just becomes an added layer of confusion when something goes viral that says, wait a minute, that may be what they called. Oh, they reversed the call, but here's a better view, and they didn't have this view. I was on the goal line. I had the best view of anybody, and it just complicates it even further.
You're right. The other thing is, and Russ and I were just talking about this during the break, the fact that the leagues are now openly embracing gambling to the point that TNT has people from Las Vegas on talking about, do you want the over-under? Well, it's 217 for the Warriors. That they're to the point that they're actually educating the public about it. When you do this, CG, you're embedding the league's credibility within the confines of what was a taboo proposition. Once you make it mainstream, what you're doing, and you're talking about apps where real time you may be able to bet play to play, you tell me how long it's going to be till somebody loses their mind in the stands when this kind of thing happens, and it costs them huge money, and they are 10 feet from that official that cost them the dough. You tell me what happens in an NBA game.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And you know, it's one of the reasons why on a much more simplistic level, and just, you know, it doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme of things, but on my program, you know, I do Friday picks during the college football and pro football season, but we never use point spreads. We never use anything other than it. The segment is about having fun and picking a winner straight up. That's all it is. And it's really more about analyzing and breaking down five or six games. It has nothing to do with betting lines, because I couldn't care less about that. And for me, even talking about the whole Las Vegas odds and what have you, all those are is they're trying. I mean, those are places that are trying to make money by getting people to move to a team one way or the other, irrespective of whether the line is going to actually be remotely accurate.
And it's also a blatant attempt by networks to get more viewers by saying, we're going to talk about the gambling that, look, we're all aware of it. We know how it's done, but I think to legitimize it the way the leagues are doing it right now, there is, you talk about the unforeseen consequence. It is, you're telling somebody, you're empowering somebody who before the league could say with justification, well, you know what, you didn't like the call, you shouldn't have been gambling. Now you can say, you know what, you told me it was okay to gamble, you put this app in here, and now you hosed me because this bleepity bleep just made a bad call, and it cost me money, and the guy is only 10 feet from me, and I've had enough because it's the third time he shafted me tonight while I'm betting play to play. And I don't know that the league has made a lot of inroads in the unforeseen consequence of what they're trying to do, because it is a blatant grab for more viewers. And the more we segment viewership with more entities, cable and satellite-wise, the greater the competition to get people's eyeballs on your product. That's all there is to it. Hey, Christopher, we succeeded in getting nowhere in the emails today. That is my fault, but we'll tee it up next week.
One quick thing for you. Daryl and I follow each other on Twitter, and he did have a tweet the other day, and I think it was directed at you. Steph Curry is the greatest NBA player since Tim Duncan.
Yeah. That's his Spurs bias rolling in. He also said that when he adopted the idea of the elliptical line at 25 feet, that it was my idea, but he didn't have room, enough space to put my name in there. Yeah, sure, you bet. And have a wonderful weekend, CJ. I'll talk to you on Monday. All right, guys. Christopher up Monday at 3:05. We'll start things at 2:05. I'll join at 3:35 as always. All right, Nick and Nick are coming up. Then Bulldog Baseball, the Giants over on 940. Thanks to Russ. Thanks to CG. Thanks to Daryl and Marcus. See you guys on Monday on KFIG Fresno.